Airtight Game Show is brought to you by AirtightGame.com. The battle of the sexes is being waged right now when you're on the front lines. Airtight Game has a full schedule of programs to help you hone your battle prowess. The next Airtight Game Boot Camp will be January 6th, 7th, and 8th in New York City. So ready your guns, gentlemen, and we'll see you there.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Airtight Game Show. This is episode number 2, and this is your host, Josh Maverick, on behalf of AirtightGame.com, along with my co-host, E-Rock, of the Long Island Lair.
Hey, guys, what's going on?
And also Big Win of the Techno Students Group.
Gentlemen, what's going on?
And we are joined today by our special guest, Nick Rogue of SameNightSeduction.com.
Yo, yo. Hey, thanks for having me on the show. Excited for this.
So we're really excited to have Nick on the show today. He's a great member of the community and huge influence on, I know, a lot of people's game, including my own. And something that Nick is known for better or worse, is his proclivity at Same Night Lays. And so today we're going to basically pick his brain on all the aspects of the Same Night Seduction, sort of what drove him to come to these conclusions and these epiphanies, and how you can reproduce them at home too. So, Nick, can you give us a little bit of background in your history in the game?
Yeah, I mean, depending on how far back you want me to go, this could be a lengthy story, but I guess the shortened version of this would be that, the guy in high school that I was, was not the guy that was, like, you know, afraid to talk to girls, wasn't the guy that, was in the corner studying math and whatnot, although I did perform very well in high school. I was also the student body president, I was the mascot, I was all of these things, but I'll tell you one thing that I wasn't. I was popular with the girls in the sense that they enjoyed being around me, but if you ask any of those girls, hey, so, yeah, that Nick guy, what do you think of him? Oh, you know, he's so nice, he's so cool. Would you fuck him? Oh, God, no. And that was kind of the impression that I gave off. I did not know how to escalate things. I didn't know how to really get outside of that friend zone that I found myself in so often. And it drove me nuts. To me, I would have rather been that guy playing Dungeons and Dragons than being around no girls, because it was just torture having them right there in my face, but knowing that nothing's ever going to happen. So I decided that I needed to do something about that, and, you know, over the course of 10-plus years, I studied seduction, I studied all the different methodologies and all of the different ways to get women in the sack, and really, I didn't catch my first real breakthrough until I decided to throw it all away and really get down to what I believe to be the essence of seduction. And once I started doing that, I was able to start becoming drastically better with getting women into bed. And as far as the whole same night lay thing, the whole same night seduction thing, how that came about is I was in Las Vegas. And Las Vegas is a city that is, you know, full of adventures, full of wild party girls, it's full of excitement, lights, the casinos, the action. It's exciting. But the problem with that city is that if you don't sleep with the girl the same night you meet her, you ain't seeing her again. You didn't stand a chance. So there was no real point in getting phone numbers. There's no real point in trying to go on dates, because if it didn't happen that night, she's going back to Des Moines, Iowa the next day, and you're never going to see her again. So it arose out of necessity. I had to make things happen quicker. And the funny thing that I noticed when I started doing that is realizing that the quicker things happened, the more likely it was going to happen anyway. So I noticed that the longer the time that went in between first meeting and banging, the more there was time there, the less likely it actually happened. So if I had met a girl a week ago, the likelihood of me banging her has almost dropped to zero, at least in the style that I was doing. And I would say this is probably in any style. The longer that time period between meeting and banging is, the less likely it's going to happen. So I wanted to make that happen as quickly as possible. And I found that not only did this work in Las Vegas, this worked anywhere. I went after Las Vegas for a few years to the polar opposite city of Las Vegas. I went to Salt Lake City, Utah, which it couldn't be any more different there. and it worked just as well, if not better there. And, you know, throughout the course of several years, tried it all over the country, and then later on all over the world, and it still held true.
Wow, that's some pretty crazy stuff. So there's actually a couple things that I want to pick your brain about just within that topic. So, and I hope I'm not jumping the gun here, but you said something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing here, that when you got down to the essence of it, that you, or the underlying principles of it, you figured that this was the best way to do it, sleeping with women as soon as possible. So can you sort of allude to some of those essentials or underlying principles that sort of informed your style?
Absolutely, and that right there, my friend, is what we call an open loop. Here's what those essences are, and the whole idea behind essence actually comes from, you know, I'm going to totally dork out here for a second and say that I studied philosophy when I was in college and ended up getting a degree in that, which means that I'm totally unemployable. My favorite philosopher out there, and probably my biggest influence, is Aristotle. And one thing that he said that always stuck with me is that if you ever want to understand a very complex topic, say you want to understand the topic of what is justice or what is beauty, you can boil everything down to the essences. What is always the case whenever you are experiencing beauty or justice or the good? Or in our case, what is the essence of seduction? What is always present whenever you are having a mutually beneficial seduction, when you are both mutually deciding to hook up? What's always there? In every instance of consensual sex, there are two things at play. You are in a situation, you are in a place where sex can realistically occur, and you're at least somewhat turned on. And I found that if you can manage those two factors, and those two factors only, that's all you really need to be doing to be getting laid. In the back of my mind, all I remember thinking about in any given interaction is, can I get her to a place where sex can realistically occur? And when I do, will she be somewhat turned on? If I could say yes to both of those, it's going to happen.
Wow. Okay. So, and that's a pretty fundamental way of looking at things. And it's something that, as an instructor in my own right and someone who's been in the community for a while, I'm always really attracted to use sort of a pun there, systems that are simple and elegant and that make sense and that try to approach things from a fundamental level.
That's one of the best parts about it, is that it doesn't, you know, it's simple interactional stuff that we should be doing, but not many guys out there know that this is what needs to happen. Like, these are the steps you got to take if, you know, you're looking to pull that same night way, which I learned, and, you know, all of a sudden I'm pulling girls, you know, like a, I don't even know a good analogy right now.
this is literally game gold, and I'm going to take this and I'm going to go one level deeper, if that's okay with you, Nick, because I just want to, like, totally get to the bottom of this here. So you said that there were two components that you were pretty adamant about achieving in the set, which was get to a place where sex can happen was the first one, and the second one was getting her turned on. I'm going to go one by one here and ask you how you do each of those things. So the first thing, getting to a place where sex can happen, we in the seduction community have called that logistics, logistical escalation, or a variety of names. I'm thinking, knowing you and knowing your style, you probably have something pretty simple to sort of move things to a place where sex can happen. So can you talk about how you actually get women to a place where sex can happen, and can you give specific examples of places? Because I think a lot of guys think that it needs to be necessarily in, you know, the perfect hotel room, 5-star, and it really doesn't, because, you know, there are bathrooms, dark corners of clubs. Not that those are elegant places, but there are places. So can you just allude to how you go about doing that?
Yeah, there's two basic things that you need to keep in mind when you're trying to get girls to that place where sex can realistically occur. And yes, one of those is logistics. Guys need to have a game plan. I see so many guys that go out and their aim is to get laid. They want to hook up with some hot girl in the bar. And yet they don't have a condom on them and they don't even have a place to take them. They're thinking, oh, well, you know, I'll just, you know, hopefully I can take her back to her place, which is really kind of a long shot It's a shot in the dark to have that happen. Can it happen? Sure, but it's probably not ideal. So when it comes to logistics, one of the biggest keys that a lot of guys are forgetting about is they're not having their own logistics together. And we're going to get into how to find girls that have good logistics for you to take them to a place where sex can realistically occur. But before you even get to that, have a game plan in mind. Where do you want this to end up? And ideally, this is going to be back at your place because it's going to be the easiest place for you to be. Well, shit. If she goes to your place, you're the king of your castle. You're the master of your domain. You control all the logistics. You control the movement throughout the house, and it's your place. If you have to go somewhere else, well, you're not going to be as much in control. That doesn't mean that you can't take it to the bathroom and bang it there, depending on where you are. That doesn't mean that you can't do it in the back seat of a car. Just realize that some girls won't do that no matter what. It would just be too outside their reality to be able to do that. Some girls you could take to their place, but maybe they live with their parents, or maybe they have roommates, or maybe they have a kid there. So all those things are going to affect things. Best case scenario, have a place to yourself, and have it be nice and clean and kempt and all that. It's going to make it ideal. You know, after that, get a hotel in the area nearby. After that, yeah, go for some of the bathroom pole type stuff or see if you can take her to her place. But the main thing is to have that figured out. What are you going to do? And one thing that I do that makes it so much easier to get her to that place later on, actually, I'll get to that after I tell you how to find girls that you can actually get to that place. The tool that you want to use to find those girls is screening. And you want to screen for girls that are going to be higher percentage plays. You want to go for girls that are more likely to be able to go with you. You know, it's all fine and dandy if you find a girl that you really enjoy, she's fun, flirtatious, she's sexy, and also she's waiting for her boyfriend to come pick her up in 5 minutes to take her home to bang her. You know, you could spend all night talking to a girl like that, but if at the end of the night her boyfriend's coming to pick her up to take her home, you know, I've heard stories of guys that, and her boyfriend was going to pick her up, but then she went home with me. Most of the time, those are just stories. I've never seen it actually happen. It's theoretically possible, but it's very, very unlikely. So you need to find girls that you are more likely to take home, because really, when it comes down to it, this is all a battle against the clock. The biggest thing that's cock blocking guys out there, it's not the fat friends, it's, you know, not your friends coming in and ruining the interaction, it's usually time. You just run out of time. If you go to any bar, and I don't know what time the bar is closed for each of the listeners here, it could be 1 o'clock, it could be 2 o'clock, it could be in Las Vegas, it's never closed, but even in Las Vegas, at 3 or 4 in the morning, it starts getting really slim pickings. 5 in the morning, it's getting pretty pathetic. So you're always racing against the clock, and you need to be using your time wisely. You need to be focusing your energy on the girls that you can actually take home that night. The girls that you can't, sure, get their number and you can follow up with them later. Is it going to be a lower percentage play? Sure, but you'll get enough extra numbers because most girls aren't going to be logistically able to go home with you that night anyway. You'll have enough that you're going to have plenty of girls to work on the back end. So how do we find these girls that you can take home at night? I basically call it 5 questions. You screen for them by asking the 5 questions. And here they are. And I'll say what they are, and if you have any questions on why you want to answer that, I can do that afterwards. But basically, who are you here with? How do you know each other? How did you get here? And really, when you ask that, you want to know how she's getting home at the end of the night, but that sounds a little bit weird and awkward and creepy if you ask that, but if you ask how she got here, you'll probably get the same information, and it won't sound nearly as creepy. The 4th question that you want to ask, this one's awesome because it also sets a very subtle sexual frame, is what are your plans for later? And then finally, you need to know what time she has to get up in the morning. And if you ask all these questions, you'll get a pretty good idea of where she is on a, you know, let's say a scale from unlikely to likely, where from 0 to 10, 0 being completely unlikely to 10 being she's perfect. She's perfect. She's ready to go. You want to spend your time on girls that are more in the likely area of things. You're rarely going to find somebody who's 100% perfectly likely, but you are going to find some that are more than others. Spend your time on those girls. Get the numbers of the girls who are unlikely, and then move on.
Alrighty. So, there's just so much there. I'm trying to figure out, you know, how to probe and what questions to ask. Erock or Big Win, you guys have any questions you want to ask or elaborations on points that Nick said that you want to make?
Well, yeah. I mean, about the logistical stuff, that is, like you said, that's one of the quintessential things you really need to figure out. I mean, if you're sitting there, I mean, I know I've run into this where I'll sit there and I'll talk to a girl, build attraction, stuff like that. I'll start sexual framing, stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, oh, well, I got to work at, you know, 7 in the morning, so I got to leave. And it's like, damn it, why didn't I hit those five logistics early on in the interaction to kind of gauge where I'm at? So, you know, it'll expedite the process a lot quicker, and, you know, I can move from there.
That's a really good point, actually, because, you know, what you're really doing when you're screening is you're really also, you're filtering, I guess it's a synonym, but, you know, and the women who don't, you know, pass the screen, you know, get dropped off, sort of like, you know, when archaeologists take those big things and they silt the sand through it and they see what remains, and sort of that's the purpose of the screen. And so really, and you bring up a really good point, it's important to do that sooner rather than later. So, Nick, I'm going to ask you, how soon into the interaction are you asking these five questions?
I'm usually doing it within the first 5 minutes at the very least. I was actually thinking about this while you guys were talking, and the only thing that I can think of that is worse than going out to a bar, wanting to meet women, and not talking to any women at all, there's actually one thing worse than that for me, and that's going and talking to one girl and talking to her all night only to find out that you couldn't take her home even if she wanted to go with you because of her logistics were awful. To me, that's so much more frustrating. If I just go and never talk to anybody, at least I can say, well, I didn't try, so, you know, that's a lame thing to do, and it's a shitty thing as well, but it's far worse to me from my perspective to spend your entire night talking to one girl that couldn't go home with you even if you wanted to. So you want to find this out quickly. The more time that you're spending on girls that are just not going to go anywhere, the interaction just can't go anywhere, so the more time you're wasting that you could be using to talk to other girls. So ideally, you would want to ask this within the first 5 minutes. And you don't even necessarily have to ask these as questions. In fact, it might even be weird if you ask them all as questions. So you can actually make statements that would imply the information. You can also just listen. A lot of the times, girls will offer up that information. Who are you here with? Oh, me and all my girls, we came in a taxi, and now I know they came in a taxi. Cool. They'll offer up some of that information, so just be paying attention. If you want to know, you know, how they got there, and I rarely ask that. I just, let me guess. You, all 20 of you, hopped into the same Volkswagen Bug like a bunch of clowns, and here you are. Awesome. And they'll tell you. So you want to find that out within the first 5 minutes. The quicker the better. Just as a, you know, word of caution, don't ask all these questions rapid fire in a row, because that will be weird. If you can weave that information into your first couple minutes, it's going to give you a very strong indication of where you should take the interaction, whether you should just get a number or begin to escalate even more so.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, like, you know, if you do have a really good vibe with a girl in the first 5-10 minutes, she has really crappy logistics, and she's going to be in town, then, you know, there's nothing stopping you from getting her number and, you know, moving on, but then talking to her later, and, you know, that's a totally legitimate game plan. But I also think, like you said, Nick, that you do have to be very, very clear about your objective for going out that night. You know, if you don't know... If you're wishy-washy about it, if you're like, oh, well, I'll take this if I get it, but I'll take that if I don't get it, then you're probably not really going to be in it. You need to be, like, sort of all in your mind on what you actually want to do. And then that brings up this question of, like, outcome dependency, right? We're told to avoid outcome dependency. So, Nick, can you talk for a second about, like, How does the idea of outcome dependency sort of balance out with really having a goal when you go out? Because I know a lot of guys, when they go out and they really have a goal and they don't get it, they can be really, really frustrated and it can be really demoralizing.
the way that I look at it is you always need to, you know, I mean, I don't know if I got this from Stephen Covey or whatever, you always want to begin with the end in mind. So when I'm going out, I am always looking, we call it putting the cart before the horse, and especially when you're learning seduction, there's a lot of places that you might have hiccups. There might be places in your game where you don't know where to take the interaction next, and you're going to be confused, you're going to not know what to do, but I always like to have that end picture in mind. Your goal there is to get laid. Now, I'm not saying beat yourself up if it doesn't happen, but you should be working and doing everything you can to make that happen. So let's say you do run out of shit to say, or let's say you do find yourself in an interaction where you don't know where to take it next. In the back of your mind, I still want you thinking, all right, my goal is to get laid here. I don't know what to do next, but I'm going to try anything possible and see what happens. And in fact, usually when I run out of stuff to say or I don't know where to do next, my default, and this should be every guy's default, is to do something to escalate the interaction. I like to liken this to poker. If you're, I don't know if any of you guys are poker players or anything, but if you play poker, there's this rule that, you know, if you call, you never learn anything more. So if you're ever in doubt of what your opponent might hold, or whether you're beat or not, you should always raise. By raising, you get information. If he re-raises, okay, now you know that he's probably got something better. You're always going to get more information by raising. So in pickup, you're always going to find out where you are better by escalating. So if you don't really know what to do next, definitely make a big escalation. That's your time to shine. And she's either going to accept that or she's going to reject it, and you're going to have to take a step back and try again later. But you'll at least know where you stand. And what's funny is that more often than not, guys are just playing it way too fucking safe, and they go for these big escalations just because I'm telling them, like, no, make a big escalation. Are you serious? It seems wrong. I'm like, just do it. Okay. So they'll do something crazy, like put their hand on their cock or something. And these guys are so surprised when, holy shit, I thought she was totally going to smack me across the face, but then all of a sudden she started making out with me or saying, you know, let's get out of here. So you want to have that goal in mind and make it happen by any means possible. Now, to balance it, you shouldn't be looking for specific responses. So say I say something cocky funny, which is something I don't necessarily do as much and necessarily recommend, but let's say I do that and she doesn't respond the way I want her to be responding. She doesn't, you know, punch my shoulder or something like that. That's okay. She gave me more information, okay? So she doesn't respond to that kind of thing. A lot of girls don't. So, all right, let's change it up a little bit. But you still want to be pushing that interaction towards that end goal.
I was going to ask, you know, it might sound a little gross, but is it better that you have a hard-on when she grabs your crotch or what?
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing more unflattering to a girl than a softie. So I, you know, if you're going to do the hand-on cock thing, definitely have a boner. Or in my case, I can get by without having a boner, but I'm assuming not everybody has 11 cock piercings. That's going to be every bit as impressive to the girl. So I would recommend you be hard. And the beautiful thing about doing that now, and this is, you know, after sexual frames have been set, and I would never, like, start the interaction this way, but once you're getting her a little bit turned on, you're starting to escalate things, you're starting to up the vibe in that sense, you can always, like, listen, you did that to me. Why did you do that to me? Here I am. You look like such a nice girl. We're having such an interesting conversation, but here I am with a goddamn boner. You did that to me. Thank you. And you'd be surprised, like, I mean, it sounds like a ballsy, crazy move, but you'd be surprised how often this ballsy move, or almost literally ballsy move, is the key moment that turns it really into that hypersexual realm. Now, make sure when you do this, too, that you're doing it in a discreet way. You don't want to be doing this, like, you know, out on the dance floor in a way that, hey, everybody, look at this, I just put her hand on my dick. Do it in if you are on the dance floor, make sure she's in front of you or it's covered so nobody can see it. You're off in a dark corner, it's under a table, that kind of thing. Because if you're trying to put it on display, she's going to realize that her reputation is always on the line when she's dealing with you. But other than that, I mean, do it. You'd be surprised how aroused. I mean, there's nothing more arousing to a girl than your hard cock.
I'd like to take a step back here and look at this from a slightly bigger picture also. So when I teach game, I basically divide stuff down into three sort of areas, the verbal component, the physical component, and the logistical component, each which have its own purposes. So, for example, if you have a lot of, you know, verbal and emotional connection and not enough physicality, then, you know, very often you get put in the friend zone. So you want a pretty solid balance and a pretty high level of what I would call compliance in these three different areas. So that's sort of one of the ways I approach game from. So I'm curious, for you, you've expressed some stuff to us that sort of, I would say, falls in the verbal domain. Things like the five questions, which is sort of logistical too. Which is a logistical too, but, you know, five questions, which is a verbal thing. The sexual frames, which is a verbal thing. I'm curious, while you're asking these questions or setting these verbal frames, how are you doing your physicality? Are you one of those kind of players that is all up in her shit? Are you touching her a lot? Are you maybe, you know, more of that old school where you're a couple, you know, a foot or two away? Like, how do you play the physicality in combination with all the other stuff you're doing?
You know, I really like this question, and it comes down to being able to calibrate to the situation, which I know is just this nebulous term that nobody really understands until they understand it. But basically, it's being able to match where she is in the interaction and being able to mirror that. So there's definitely good rules of thumb when it comes to this. For the most part, if you want to bang the girl, you're going to have to touch her at some point. And I find, for the most part, the sooner the better. Now, there is a little bit of a caveat here. If you are being overtly sexual, especially early on, you don't want to be groping all over her. You don't want to be, you know, talking about all the filthy things that you're going to do to her while you are, you know, arm around her ass and, or, you know, you got her hugging and whatnot, especially if it's early on. So you want to calibrate it for that, especially before she is really started to view you through a sexual frame, before she's really started to see you as a sexual potential. You don't want to be touching her too much, and you want to make sure when you do touch that girl that it is going to be calibrated. Now, here's the interesting thing. I know there's a lot of people that really get big into, you know, Kino escalation ladders and whatnot, and, you know, you do this, then that. To me, I think, and I could be wrong on this, but to me it seems fairly intuitive. I think it's fairly intuitive that a touch on the elbow or a touch on the shoulder with the back of the hand is far less intimate than if I were to touch her twat or if I were to grab her boobs. It's going to be completely, you know, one's very intimate, one is very social and whatnot. And even everywhere in between, it's fairly intuitive. It's just being able to touch them in the right spots at the right time. Now, as a good general rule of thumb, the more intimate the touch, the more discretion you should be having. If you are going to be, you know, let's say you are going to kiss her, or you are going to touch her boob, or whatever, you damn well better be doing it in a place where it's more secluded, it's more discreet, so that she knows that you're not going to ruin her reputation, because one of the biggest reasons that girls don't hook up with guys really quickly or with them at all is they feel like they're going to ruin their reputation by doing so. And one way that you can signal to the entire bar and, most importantly, the girl you're talking to is by trying to make a big display out of every Kino escalation that you make. I've seen this a lot of times. Guys will, you know, just to show off to other guys, you know, their wingman or whatnot, they'll go and they'll make out with a girl really quickly on the dance floor. And you know what? That's awesome. They can go high-five their friend, and then the next Kino move they're going to be doing is jerking off later that night when she doesn't want to hook up with him later, because you just demonstrated to the entire bar, hey, I'm not discreet at all. And so you always want to calibrate it to where she is and how much discretion you have. The more intimate that touch gets, the more you need to keep it on the down low, secret, and away from the viewing eyes of other people in the bar.
Nice. Very true. That discretion is really important. And I find that guys fall into, as you alluded to, one of two categories. They're either, well, when they're doing it wrong at least, they're either, you know, way too sort of sheepish or way too like, oh, look what I can do, and, you know, neither one of those is really going to work. You really need to be like the cool fucking guy who can do it, but is like really, really chill about it, and that sort of almost like understated confidence, and that really seems to work a lot in situations like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I am constantly escalating. If I'm not escalating on the kinesthetic level, if I'm not escalating on the touch level, I'm doing it in a different form. I'm doing it verbally, be it through sexual frames or sexual languaging, or maybe I'm even doing it, I guess you might call it logistically, trying to use your terminology here, just by moving her around, because just that movement, I call it three-dimensional escalation. That's an escalation in and of itself. You can sometimes bang girls by using only one or, you know, any of these different tools to escalate things, but you can bang girls just by moving them around. I've done it before and said nothing sexual. I've done, you know, nothing besides that one thing and still had it work. So there's lots of different ways that you could be escalating. And what I use as a general rule, I will escalate with one of my little bag of trick tools that I have and do that until it starts, you know, getting a little bit of resistance, then shift gear, and I will escalate using a different channel. Once that starts getting a little resistance, shift gear, and just keep doing that until you end up in bed.
That is the ultimate goal, and that follows along with some of the experience that I've had. So you said that you used just logistical escalation before to actually get away, and actually about a year and a half ago, I developed a system that used purely physical escalation and almost no words besides maybe like hi, and going up, and went from open to close in something like 10 to 15 minutes if you were pretty proficient at it, using just really rapid physical escalation with very little in the way of the other two areas that we talked about. So can you talk to the effect of the, and now we're getting a little bit off topic, but now I'm just curious, like you've piqued my interest about this particular thing. Can you just tell me what the solo logistical escalation pull looks like, or in the cases that have happened, what the texture of that was?
Basically, if you want to get a girl just by touching her and getting her into bed, is that the question that I'm...
The question was, so I at least mentally and conceptually, separate escalation into three categories. So what I call emotional verbal, which is just using your verbals and language to do things. That's where most of the game falls into, routines, DHVs, IOIs, things like that. And then the physical domain, which is purely touching, and the logistical domain, which is pretty much moving around, which does obviously have some bleed over into the keynote because, you know, you're usually holding her hand or moving her, you know, things like that. So I'm curious, you mentioned that you've had some pulls that have come purely from logistical escalation only, or predominantly from logistical escalation, meaning that just by moving her around, you were able to get enough compliance to basically close her. And I'm wondering what the theme of that is, because I feel like maybe I'm jumping the gun here. I'll let you say it, and then I'll say what I'm thinking. So go ahead.
Okay. I have different terminology for this, though. Me, logistical escalation, I guess it would fall into that. I call it three-dimensional escalation. The reason I do that is because it's basically escalating her through space. It's escalating her through movement. And so there's actually five steps to escalating this way. It's technically a sixth step. It's kind of the implicit one, but it's where all interaction starts, where all escalation starts. The implicit step zero in this is you have to approach her. I know there's guys out there that love the idea of a girl walking up to them, saying hi, starting the interaction. It probably isn't going to happen. It's very unlikely to happen. So, and usually if it does happen, it's probably not going to be your ideal girl. So you need to make that approach. That's just kind of the baseline. That's step zero. So after that, we've got a five-step process for three-dimensional escalation. And the first one is you want to get the conversation to fraction within the group. This obviously is something that is going to apply only to girls that are in groups, and you could skip any of these steps if they don't apply, but it's rare that you're going to find a girl that is by herself in the bar. If you do, she's probably either waiting for her friends or boyfriend or something like that, or in an even rarer situation, she is legitimately there by herself. Find that, fucking escalate, because it's a rare thing, and you need to capitalize on it. She's there to hook up, so make that happen. But in all normal situations, she's going to be there with friends. She's going to be there with a group. So you need to get that conversation to fraction. So I always approach the group, be friendly to everybody there. And there's a couple reasons why I do that. One, I found that girls that are attractive tend to also be with other girls that are attractive. Sure, they might have a token ugly girl that makes them feel more attractive, but give or take, most girls are there with girls that are somewhere in their same range of attractiveness. And I don't know which one is going to be the one that I'm going to go for. I don't know who has the best logistics in that group yet. I don't know who's going to be the most fun and interesting and more my type until I approach. I never know any of this stuff before I actually get into that interaction. So I kind of want to feel out the group, see who's got the best logistics, who's the most fun, who's the most responsive, and who's the most attractive, and go from there. Once I've got that figured out, my first step is I want to get that girl to conversationally fraction from her group. She'll still be technically with that group, but she's going to start to turn away from them. She's going to start talking specifically to me and not to the entire group, and vice versa. I'm going to be talking specifically to her and not the entire group. The other reason why you want to approach this way is because all of her friends, they can be either your greatest allies in the seduction or your worst goddamn enemies. They can be, you can make or break that just in the sense that if you completely ignore her friends from the very get-go or if you try to do classic style go and make the target type stuff, you're going to find that you're going to get a lot more resistance from the friends later on. So I always want to win them over because in the end, they can either help or hurt me. Okay, so let's say I got the girl to step one. She is talking to me and only me. The next thing I want to do is I want to get her so she's still in the group, but she's back to back. There's no eye contact. There's no, it's easiest to picture this when there's two girls there. If I'm talking to one girl, I want her ass to be touching the ass of the other girl. I want them looking away. There's no eye coding, there's no eye contact, it's you having, sincere conversation without the intruding eyes of her friend wondering what the hell's going on. Step three is I want to get her to be outside of earshot from her friend, but still within eyesight of her friend. And this is going to make it easier for the other further escalations later on. I want her to, take her maybe even 5, 10, 20 feet away, so that her friends can't overhear, but they can still see her if they're still worried about her. And this is awesome, because in this space, I could start doing a lot more of the verbal escalation that I couldn't really do in front of her friends. I could start setting much deeper sexual frames. I could start talking a lot dirtier. If her friends can overhear that, they're going to block later on, or she's going to feel like a slut if her friends know that you're talking dirty. But the second I get her out of earshot of her friends, I can do all that stuff. It's amazing. Step four, I want to get her out of earshot of her, or eyesight and earshot of her friends. And this is where I can start doing some crazy escalations. I can start really touching her. I can start really, doing handholds, boob grabs, ass smacks, stuff like that, hair pulls, all the stuff that I would never do in front of her friends. But now that they're out of eyesight, full on, it's on when it comes to that kind of escalation. And then finally, step five, and this is one that guys tragically forget, do it all the time, and it sucks because their goal is to get laid, and they go out and they run an awesome interaction with a girl, and then they forget step five, and step five is get them the fuck out of the bar, get them to a discreet location, get them somewhere where you can actually bang them. And if you do those five steps, yes, there's some things that you can interweave from different tools and whatnot, different strategies and techniques. Interweave with those five steps, because if you do those five steps, you will be getting laid.
Yeah, that logistical, I would call it a logistical compliance ladder. That ladder, that sequence, the five steps that you've outlined, I think is a super powerful way to get from open to a place where sex can actually happen in the smoothest way as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys are always worried about step five. They're always worried, I don't know if she'll go with me. Just as a good rule of thumb, if in doubt, try it. You can always try later if she doesn't accept it then. But a good rule of thumb is if you've done step four three times, if you've moved her around outside of eyesight of her friends three times, you can almost always pull her back home.
Nice.
Absolutely.
So, okay, and thank you for giving us that high-level picture of all the emotional and verbal and physical and logistical compliance that you use in your own system and your own methods to achieve that. I can see in my mind's eye, as somebody who's been in this game for a while, that those are going to be super powerful in moving the interaction forward, and I'm seeing pieces of the puzzle click together here. Now, I want to go back into the specifics of the SNL a little bit more. And
absolutely.
Earlier in the phone call, you said that there were two components to the SNL. And I hope I'm paraphrasing correctly here. The first one was getting to a place where sex can happen, which we've talked about quite a bit. And the second one, which we haven't touched on as much and which I want to touch on for a couple minutes here, is getting her turned on. So what techniques do you use to get the woman turned on when you're in the interaction?
In a strange way, we actually have talked about a lot of these things. We haven't talked about every one of them because, they haven't come up. But there's actually a lot of different ways that you can escalate the interaction. Basically, that's your primary tool for making that happen. For getting a woman turned on is you need to escalate. Now, when guys typically use that word, they tend to think of either Kino or they tend to think of, one thing. But escalation is actually a whole bunch of things. There's at least 10 different ways that I can think of off the top of my head to escalate the interaction. You want to be constantly escalating. And one of the ways that you can do that is through the three-dimensional escalation, or as you call it, logistical escalation. That's one way to get her turned on. Just that movement is going to get things moving in that direction. Touching, kinesthetics, that kind of stuff is another way that you can do it. Other ways you can do it, you can set strong sexual frames. That's going to get her excited. It's going to get her viewing you, not as like another friend or another guy who's just going to entertain her for the night. It's going to be the kind of guy that is viewed as a sexual potential or future sexual partner.
I see. So in essence, you're saying that the act of escalation itself is something that, and escalation itself in a variety of domains, such as emotional, physical, your 3D model, the act of that escalation in and of itself will pretty much be the main driving force that is actually turning her on.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And like I was saying earlier, what I'll do is I'll use one of these methods or one of these tools for escalating to get her turned on. And I'll do that until I start feeling a little bit of resistance, and then I'll shift gears. And you're going to find actually a lot of the tools that I use for escalating or getting her turned on, they actually have a lot of overlap. So I might be doing simultaneous things on multiple different levels. For example, when I was talking about the three-dimensional escalation, when I get her out of earshot of her friends, that's when I'm going to plug in. I'm also doing, step three of the three-dimensional escalation, but I'm also going to plug in a lot of sexual languaging. I'm going to start doing a lot of sexual framing there. So it all kind of weaves into this seamless whole where one tool might actually have many different applications. Or one of my ace in the hole type escalation tools is getting her to invest. I call it baiting her to invest. And this is actually one of those keys to any interaction that gets underplayed. But it's probably the number one thing that I do that makes things so quick, escalate so quickly. And the reason is because the more the girl invests, the more she's going to not pay attention to all the stupid mistakes I make and any guy makes. And the more that she's going to feel like everything was her idea, when it feels like her idea, girls will backwards rationalize just about anything. I always think of it this way. Every time I bang a new girl, I always have this kind of a post-coital interview where I find out, when did you first realize that you were going to hook up with me? Or when did you first find me attractive? Or realize I was attractive? And you know what they always say when I ask them that question, when did you first find me attractive?
What's
every
that?
Fucking time. They're like, from the moment you walked up. And I know what I look like. I think I'm good looking, but I know I'm also completely deluded on that. I'm fat and bald and in my mid-30s. I am not the kind of guy that any girl is, elbowing her girlfriends going, see that guy over there? Fat guy with the bald head. I want to fuck that guy. That is not happening. But that's not going to happen. But the beautiful thing is, when I get a girl to invest in the interaction, she will backwards rationalize everything she needs to make it feel like, yes, I was attracted to him from the moment he walked up. Why? Because she invested in it. Because she put so much effort into it. And when she puts that much effort into the interaction, she wants a goddamn payoff. She wants some goddamn orgasms. So she'll backwards rationalize. And when she says that she was attracted to me from the very moment, she's not technically lying. In her head, she really honestly does believe that. So it's such a powerful tool. If you can get girls to invest in the interaction, the beautiful thing is, you can, once you get really skilled at doing this, you can sit back and she does all the work for you. How awesome would that be? You didn't have to do all that much work. She did all the escalating. That's an awesome thing. So that's one of my favorite ways to make that happen.
Nice. And you spoke about sexual frames in a few of the different tools that you mentioned. How often do you use those? I'm curious.
Every interaction that I'm in. And there's a couple different categories of sexual frames. I now tend to think of it just as framing in general. They don't necessarily have to be explicitly sexual. I like to think of the frames that I set as being either explicitly sexual or implicitly sexual. I like to think of them in terms of sexual frames and flirtatious frames. And the reason I do that is because I could set a lot of really heavy sexual frames and I could do them really quickly. But if I did them in the wrong setting, in the wrong context, and with all of her friends listening in, it's going to be counterproductive. Sure, she might view me as a sexual potential, but she also is going to view me as somebody who's going to damage her reputation with her friends. It's going to make her feel like a slut. So I will definitely start off with a lot of flirtatious stuff. I mean, one of my classic things that I say just about every time, you can say this in front of her friends, it's not that big a deal, because it's not explicitly sexual, but the implication is very sexual. So one of my favorite things to say, and it's something I give my students every time when they come on infield training, all right, you're going to say this to the girl and you're going to say it within the first couple minutes. I just say, you know what, you seem like a really nice girl, but I detect a serious naughty side. That's something that you could say in front of a friend. It's flirtatious. It's sexually, it's implicitly sexual, but it's not explicitly sexual. Maybe she just likes to skip class, and every once in a while she goes 5 minutes over, or 5 miles over the speed limit. Could be that, or it could be the word naughty in her mind is almost always tied directly to sex, but it's not explicitly so. If I had her in a more discreet location where her friends weren't around, I would say something a lot more sexual. I might say something like, you know what? I've noticed something. The hottest girls on the planet are also the lousiest in bed. You look like you'd lay there like a starfish. Now, that's bait her to invest on the one hand. It also sets a sexual frame where she's going to, well, no, I'm fucking amazing, and here's why. I move like this. I do this. And the second she does all that, not only do you set a sexual frame, but you baited her to invest. And, you know, something that is, you know, going to help you greatly. If she's proving how awesome she is in bed verbally, she's going to want to do it physically later. But I would never do that in front of her friends.
Right. So I was going to, you actually baited one of my questions. I was going to ask you, what was the, how do I phrase it, the sort of, you know, one sexual framing idea that our listeners could walk away with and just apply to their very next set. And that was, it was, let me see if I'm getting this right. You're a really nice girl, but you have a naughty side about you, or you seem really naughty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one thing that you do. You can use the word wild as well, but I prefer naughty.
Oh, did I say wild?
No. That's another word that I might substitute as well. I mean, they both work equally well. And I sometimes, like, especially like in Vegas, or if I'm in some sort of a more touristy party area, if I'm on spring break, like last year when I was in spring break in Havasu, I was using the word wild instead of naughty just because it seemed to fit the situation a little bit better. But, yeah, either one of those words will work. Yeah, that's one you could do. The other one I told you, I'll give you one more that I love, one of my favorites, is once again, I don't say this in front of her friends. I wait till we're out of earshot, and I'll say, you know what, I've noticed something. I have never met a girl who didn't claim to get the world's greatest blowjob. Most girls are okay.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know what that's about, the overinflated sense of giving a blowjob for most girls. I really don't know where that comes from, but...
Well, no girl wants to think that she's lousy and fat. Every girl, like, she'd be a goddamn virgin, and she still thinks she would be the best lay on the planet. So it's something that's really ingrained into their self-esteem and their self-worth, and they want to believe that, you know, they're always really, really good in bed, even if they're not. I mean, I guess you could say as guys, we tend to say the same, or think the same thing, where, yeah, dude, best 8 seconds of your life. But, yeah, I mean, no matter what, when you do this kind of thing, the girl's going to feel compelled to prove to you that, no, I get the world's greatest blowjob because I cup the balls and blah, 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 lick the asshole, X, Y, Z, whatever they say. But this baits her as well as sets that sexual frame, and, you know, the more she talks about how awesome she is at giving you head, the more she's going to want to give you head.
Nice. Tell us about...
The beautiful thing about it all is she's going to think it's all her idea.
Yeah, you're being very subtle here. You're putting these ideas forward. Even though going back to the naughty thing, you're saying you're naughty, and you're just sort of letting that incubate in her own mind, and you're, you know, moving on to the next topic. I'm imagining you're probably not milking that thread for 15 minutes. You know, you're just, you know, throwing that out there and sort of letting the interaction unfold and, you know, seeing if that sort of, you know, blossoms into that little seed of naughtiness blossoms into something later.
Yeah, and it oftentimes does. Every once in a while, you will get a girl that's like, I'm not naughty, or no, I'm not, or something like that. Now, the reason I like throwing this one out there is early in the interaction is, one, you can get away with saying that in front of a friend is something that you throw out early on. It's also one that you can use to scream girls out. What I will do with this is if she tries to reject that naughty frame early on, my first course of action is to just reassert it again, and reassert it with discretion this time. I will just put my fingers to my lips and like, shh, you know, stay between you and I. Nobody has to know. And most of the time, if you just push that frame right back on her and throw in a little bit of discretion, she'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. But if I push that out there and she rejects it the second time, you know that this is going to be a girl that's going to be a pain in the ass, no fun. Not going to really be all that exciting for you. Probably is also lousy in bed and doesn't know how to flirt. So she's doing you a favor if she rejects that the second time, and you could just, you know, do an about face, walk away, don't even have to say another word. You know that this is probably going to be a really boring interaction. So it helps you in screening out the girls that are probably just going to waste your time or just bore you to fucking tears.
And going back to screening very briefly here, how many, so you would screen that girl out, you know, I do this too, like, man, a girl can be hot, but, like, if she's boring as shit, I'm just like, you know what, like, have a nice night, because I just, you know, give me, like, you know, an 8 with an awesome personality and a zest for sex over a 10 who's, like, a wet rag and boring, you know?
Well, and like I was saying with that that sexual frame / bait into investing I said earlier, it's actually coming from my real-life experience. I've been with 9s and 10s. I've been with porn stars that every guy listening to this has heard of. I've been with people that have been on reality shows, you know, legitimately 9s and 10s. And honestly, other than that porn star I mentioned, who actually wasn't looking near as good, she's kind of an old-school one. But anyhow, the 9s and 10s are almost always lousier in bed. That comes from my experience. It's true. They don't have to be. It's very good in bed. So, I mean, if it comes down to it, I'd rather bang a 6 or 7 or an 8 who is good in bed, who is exciting, who has more going for her than just her looks, who is an interesting and exciting and flirtatious person to be around.
Yeah, I actually, this year, I pulled probably the hottest girl up to this point that I've ever pulled in my entire life. And I have to say, by far, it was probably in the bottom 3 sexual experiences that I've ever had. It was probably, she literally just laid there like a, what do they call them? They call them a something queen or something like that, and just lay there. I forget what the word is, but.
Ice queen, I don't know.
We like to call them potatoes, because they just lay there like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was horrible. I mean, you know. You know, and I fucked, like, you know, exactly what you said, 6, 7s, and 8s, who are just way more into it and just, you know, having fun with it, you know, and that's really what it's about. So, Nick, tell me about your first success. Well, choose one of these, either one of the first successes you had after applying your method, or maybe just your favorite story of applying your method. Tell us one of those stories that you have in the bag about that.
All right. It was kind of a gradual realization, so there wasn't one specific girl that I can think that I applied this method to. It was a work in progress, and it evolved over time. But one story that I can share, just to answer the question, it was when I was really starting to get my flow, get my groove, get my abilities to seduce quickly in gear. I was when I was really starting to realize, shit, I think I understand this now. I used to manage a major gentleman's club in Las Vegas, and we had just hired these two fresh off the boat Israeli twins to be cocktail servers there, and we always had this joke in the strip club there, hey, what's the difference between a cocktail server and a stripper? I'll ask you.
I don't know.
What do you think it is? 2 weeks. But anyhow, we get all these cocktail servers 2 weeks later, the strippers. But anyhow, so we got these two fresh off the boat Israeli twins, and I start flirting with them because, I mean, their bodies were rock hard. They just, they were just barely out of the military because they're all required to do 2 years of military time, so they were just rock solid bodies, just really smoking sexy, and they're goddamn twins. And I started like, that is my type. Like, I love those, cute Middle Eastern girls. And so the thing about strip clubs is there's always cameras, well, at least in Las Vegas, there's cameras on every inch of the building just by law. But every strip club there also has that one dark corner that the camera doesn't quite reach. And all the girls, they want to know where it is so they, maybe make a little extra money by throwing in a complimentary hand job or whatever. I would never tell the girls where it was specifically. And I was flirting with these girls, and I'm like, all right, listen, we're going to go back there. We're going to have some fun. You cannot tell any of these dancers where this spot is that the camera doesn't go. So I take these two Israeli girls back there, and they both just start blowing me. Meanwhile, and this isn't discreet at all. You should not do this. This is a horrible take-home lesson for any of this kind of show. But meanwhile, I tell all of the managers, like, go watch the cameras. You're going to love this. Because I'm not going to tell these girls where the cameras don't go. So they go and watch one of the most amazing two sisters, twins, going down on me at the same time. It was amazing. Turns out later on they were actually married, too, with some sort of sham green card marriage. But one of my more exciting memories of really putting this stuff into action and really starting to get some weird, crazy results.
Nice. That sounds like every guy's fantasy right there.
Absolutely.
That's nice. So I'm curious, and then we're going to sort of start wrapping up here. What are your plans for the future with pickup, with coaching, with your company? Do you have any upcoming programs or products you'd like to mention here on the show?
Every time I get to this portion of any interview, I never like to sound like I'm just trying to sell you guys, trying to give as much awesome information as I can. Right now, I'm kind of taking Same Night Seduction in a different direction, and people are going to like what I'm about to do. I can't give too many details about that. But if they are interested, and listeners, guys, if you're interested in attending training, I do have one on the calendar in January, and you can go take a look at it on samenightseduction.com. You can chat with me over the phone. We'll talk about all the details and specifics and the infield footage that we're going to shoot of you and just why 3 out of 4 guys that take my boot camp end up hooking up. We're going to go over all that kind of stuff. Also, if you don't have a copy of my, my manifesto, we call it Same Night Simplified, where I teach you through the course of 4 modules, how to go from really shitty with girls, don't know how to approach, all the way to being able to get girls in bed the same night you meet them. So you can get both of those on my website, samenightseduction.com. I don't want to pimp it out any more than that.
No, and that's cool. I really appreciate that. I just want, you know, I want you to mention it so that people who are interested in finding more about you can look into that. So those modules, you said those four modules are online?
Yeah, you can get those online. It's a, you know, it's part of my signature course right now. So then go there. There's also, like, if you guys just want a nice, quick, free guide, go to stateofmindseduction.com and get the How to Get Laid Tonight guide. It's free. Throw your email in. I'll give you five quick things that you can do that will infinitely increase your odds of getting laid. Like, they're just quick fix things, but if you do all five things that are mentioned in that guide, even if you suck at doing them, like you do a very half-assed average, you will get laid if you can do all five of them.
Nice. I'll be sure to check that out, and I hope that all of our listeners will check that out as well. Now, E-Rock, the big win, do you have any comments, questions, favorite things you'd like to say to Nick before we sign off here with him?
I think it was great that a lot of guys don't get that specific, and it's really, as someone that's a little bit newer to the community, I just really appreciate when someone is willing to get that specific in terms of what you can do to increase your success. So that's great.
I've, taken a boot camp with Nick. Actually, I went down to Columbia and hung out with him in Epic for almost 2 weeks, and it was probably the most fun I've ever had. Really, you know, the infield that they shoot of you, you know, watching yourself and do what you do, you know, they break it down and show you where you need to work on and, you know, what you're good at. So it's definitely worth the time to have somebody like that, you know, critique you and kind of show you what you're lacking. Because I know that, I mean, the hardest part for me down there was the language barrier. But as soon as I got back to America, I pulled like three girls in 1 week just like that. And it was more than I've done probably within like a month. So it's definitely...
You were definitely doing it under much more difficult circumstances. Columbia's tough. It's really difficult here. If you do it here, the States is a breeze. So, yeah, going back home, it doesn't surprise me that it just all came together because it's so much easier there.
Without the
language barrier and all that.
Is the upcoming program you have in Columbia, or where is it at?
No, it's going to be in Las Vegas.
Oh, okay, nice. So, yeah, guys, definitely check that out if you're in the States and, you know, if you don't want to have to be burdened with having beautiful women all over you in Columbia, then you can go to Las Vegas and check that out.
Those girls are not ugly, I'll tell you that.
No.
I've heard they're gorgeous, and I need to make it down there one of these days. Alrighty, well, on behalf of the Airtight Game Show, brought to you by AirtightGame.com, I'm Josh Maverick, and my co-hosts, Big Win.
That's me.
And E-Rock.
All right, guys, hope you enjoyed.
And Nick Rogue of StateMindSeduction.com.
Hey, thank you very much for having me on this show. Real pleasure. It was real fun.
We're signing off and saying bye.